This is the State of Things, broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stacio. More than 50 years ago, Elizabeth Spencer wrote of a vacation love affair in Italy in The Light in the Piazza. That novella is what made her literary reputation. Today, Elizabeth Spencer is 92, and she maintains that reputation. Her newest book is a collection of short stories, Starting Over. These stories are set in her southern home states of Mississippi and North Carolina. Elizabeth Spencer joins us now to talk about Starting Over and her place in southern literature. Welcome back, Elizabeth Spencer. So good to have you.
Thanks for having me.
Tell us about these stories. You have not been waiting for the past 50 years to write a book of short stories. You've been writing these.
Oh, no. I've had other books out in the meantime.
Right, right. And tell us about these stories, because they've been you've written these over a period of time as well, right?
Oh, they've come about little by little over the last, I would say, 9 or 10 years, and now collected under one cover. But before that, I had a long book of stories out called The Southern Woman, and that was... It's still in print in Modern Library. So this is an add-on to those.
These books certainly are set in the South, mostly in Mississippi and North Carolina.
Right. These are.
In Starting Over. Is this something you've focused on? You've been focused? I mean, it's so interesting to think about The Light in the Piazza. Is this thing set in Italy, and yet your heart, you are a Southern writer. You're quintessentially the Southern writer.
Most of my novels and stories do take place in the South, in Mississippi, but some of them, since I lived in Italy a while, it was natural to finally write a story about Italy that's set in Italy, exactly about Italy, because it's Southerners in Italy, and that holds it in a way, in the Southern focus.
Mm, right. The return trip, the first in this collection of Starting Over, I think sets a lot of the themes that, to me, set you apart as a writer. Questions of memory, family, Thomas Wolfe, even, you evoke his image in this. Tell us about that story.
Well, the character Edward Glenn has showed up in a lot of my stories. I even wrote a play in which he was a central character. He's just a person from Mississippi who seems to show up at unexpected times, and things always happen differently when he's there. And I don't know why this is. He's one of these wandering characters. Somebody said he was bound to be based on somebody I knew, but no, he wasn't. He was an invention, but he was a lasting invention because every once in a while he shows up and write another story in which he features. He was a longtime cousin and a longtime friend of the woman in the story who's there in the mountains with her husband for the summer. And this is what causes a stir because they used to date and so on. And her son happens to look like him. And this causes some kind of friction with the husband. And nobody knows if he was the father or not. Probably not. But at any rate, there's the family resemblance has shown up. So this causes this tension in the story. And that's about how it goes on.
And as you say, he was her cousin as well.
Yes.
And so that as much as the fact that this is an old flame whose child resembles her child resembles him, and that's not the man she's married to. Could I get you to read from that story, Return Trip? Elizabeth Spencer's new collection is called Starting Over. We should probably set this up a little bit because Edward has paid a surprise visit to Patricia and her husband, Boyd.
Yes.
And sort of now he's there.
Oh, Patricia went down to the airport to meet Edward and bring him back for a visit. But the airport was in Asheville, and the house they rented is in the mountains. In Asheville, Edward and Patricia sat in front of a large house that was half burned down, surrounded by guard ropes, now well into reconstruction, which was not at the moment proceeding. It was the remains of my old Kentucky home, the house Thomas Wolfe had lived in and wrote about, though why Edward had to see it, she wasn't quite clear. "It's for my soul," he explained. "Tricia, I've got to live again. Every little bit helps." We learned earlier that his wife had died and was living in California. "Didn't Wolfe have to put up with that awful family?" Edward recalled. "I wonder how he stood it. We were luckier than that. Are we getting into family?" She was tentative. "It's what we share," said Edward. "Boyd's family," she began again. "What about them?" "I've managed somehow. I even get on with his mother." She switched subjects. "You met Jacqueline in Mexico." Yes, and I knew even then she was dying by degrees. After that, we went back to Pasadena. I followed. Then there was chemo, all sorts of cures. But through it all, she was happy. We were happy. Was that your reward? The trouble now is she was terribly rich. I didn't know how rich. It was some family legacy. Who's ever going to believe I didn't marry her for that? Didn't even know a lot about it. Who'd believe it? Nobody in Mississippi, she was quick to say. Edward laughed. Right on. A pause then. How did this house burn? If I knew, I'd forgotten. I read Wolf long ago. You learn something from other people's bad times. Like what? How to get through your own? Edward. It's Mark. It's my son Mark. Of course. What about him? Well, I better tell you. She laughed a little nervously. He looks a lot like you. Poor kid. Only, well, now you've said it. He sat quietly, slowly digesting the implications. I thought that was a dead issue. Want me to leave? He was half joking. She was silent. Tricia, what if he does? Nothing happened. We both know that. We've been all over it. I don't even think about it. Haven't for ages. He stopped again, realizing he was getting off on the wrong tack. Let the past go.
Elizabeth Spencer reading from Return Trip, one of the stories in her latest collection, Starting Over. Let the past go. You bring Thomas Wolfe into this story. What role does he play for you in this?
I don't know why Edward wanted to go there and look at it, because it was one of the sites, I suppose, around Asheville. And he's trying to get better acquainted again with his cousin. So they just do that, and he talks about his memories of having read Thomas Wolfe. I'm not sure what he has to do with the story, to tell you the truth.
Does Edward, when he surprises you with a visit, does he intrude on the story that you've already begun, or is he there and you build a story around him, in this case, for instance?
Well, I think I intended all along that he would show up again. Yeah. And the whole idea of Patricia being from Mississippi was really my point of entry, because they have memories of Mississippi, just like I do, and so that was easy to drift into when they get together.
It's wonderful for me how you are able to delve into these very complicated and difficult questions about memory and relationship and how things change over time in the most concrete ways, through the most concrete language, gossipy in a way. I'm able to relate to every word in it, and then I'm taken so deep inside.
Well, you've got to start with the outside, I guess, to get to the inside, and so that's what people are always doing themselves, it seems to me. People don't talk all the time on the surface. They start telling you about things, and then suddenly you're led into memories and places that you are not visible but exist with the person talking.
Right, and the deeper you get, the more ambiguous the relationship. You said he wanted to catch up with his cousin, but of course they were also romantically involved one way or another.
Yes, I don't think he was particularly thinking about that. That's what dawns on him gradually as she talks about her son. But I didn't read into that conversation that he was especially aware of that when he started out to see her. He was going around seeing various people he had known from the past, and she was on his list.
Those kind of things can happen to us over time as we revisit memories that we've certainly events that happened, then we remember them, then we remember them 10 years, 20 years later. Mm. Do things change for you like that, and do you find that the grist of even themes in your story, how even our memory changes over time?
Well, it turns out that about this book, I'm going back to Mississippi on the 1st of February, and a whole lot of things are going to be recalled to me from seeing the places where I grew up and the people that I'm related to and friends with for years. So maybe I'll get a lot of stories out of that.
I was going to say, great, then your next collection is out next year. And tell us about sightings. This is a fascinating story as well.
Oh, that came to me out of something I knew here. That's laid all in North Carolina. And I sort of visualized it as taking place on the neighborhood where I actually live in Chapel Hill. But there was a woman I knew as a friend, and she, her eyesight was not damaged by accident, but simply deteriorated, so that she had to have a large magnifying lump of looked like glass that she held before what she was reading. And that sort of made me curious, and I wondered at times if anybody I could think of would use such a thing. And then I thought about it further because there was, in my neighborhood, there was a man who was always alone. He was either walking his dog or not with anybody else. And I just wondered about him. And so from there, I jumped on to the story and the house that he might have been living in and his neighbors. It seemed to form itself. Some stories just sort of form themselves out of nowhere.
Though, interestingly enough, his, in your story, the damage comes from his own daughter, who accidentally.
Yes, because she shows up, and she's supposed to live with her mother, but she forsakes the mother and comes back to see him, and he doesn't know why. So he's going to find out in the course of the story. But, of course, the old injury she gave him is something that lingers between them.
And yet she chooses him, so a very close relationship with the father, but a deep injury that in some ways separates them, that he keeps trying to sort of let go of, and she seems not to be able to do it.
Yes, yes.
Will you read for us?
Oh, from that one, too?
Yeah, if you can.
Okay. This has a man who's the central character, I suppose you'd say, although the daughter, of course, is very important to it. He remembered the terrible day she had blinded him, the flash of blue light in his face when he was trying to fix the electric motor on her CD player. He was threading the wires together, holding them close to squint at when she had connected the plug to the outlet. His eyes streamed water and blood, and she yowled, "I'm sorry," till her mother made her stop. It seemed to him every time he looked at her, she was yowling it yet, for his sight never entirely came back. Did it matter? He could read and work as he did before. The surgery had been delicate, one eye all but blind, the other intricately damaged. The accident gave him the chance to work at home instead of at the office. He wore glasses with thick hexagonal lenses and had to have special equipment to work with figures. Insurance supplied the major expense, so what did it matter in the long run? Sight damaged people went successfully through life. It was well known, but he read it as a constant theme in his daughter's eyes whenever they met his, never to be erased. "I'm sorry, I'm sorry." And instead of "it's okay, forget it," his eyes said now, "Why are you here?" No answers so far, but as Marcia told him, he had to try.
Elizabeth Spencer reading from the story Sightings, one of her collections, Starting Over. She's going to be reading at the Regulator in Durham on Thursday, January 16th, but is here with us today. I mean, I sort of love the idea of what he reads in her eyes.
Uh-huh. They keep on trying to sight each other, in a sense, because there's mystery between them. Why has she come? And, you know, how does she feel about him now? So the sightings last all the way through the story, the theme of sightings.
That
was easy to do because the showing up is mysterious, unexpected, and why is persistently a question until it's finally revealed.
You like that as an idea, things that just pop up in your head or pop up on your doorstep without being
expected. Well, that story just sort of formed itself. Mm-hmm. I think stories just kind of grow on their own.
Family is very important. Southern families in particular. Do you think there's something different, fundamentally different about the Southern family?
Oh, my goodness. Aren't you a Southerner?
I am now.
You are now, but you weren't. I think in the South, it's always family, family, family. Yeah. What does your family think? Why do your family do this? Sure. That goes on and on, at least in Mississippi, and I suppose it still does, though I've lived away for a lot of my life.
And your stories, I think, too, indicate the kind of fraught relationship that and the sort of mixed, the alloyed, I guess, benefits of that closeness, that sense of love and identity, but the suffocating reality of often not being able to escape an identity.
Yes, well, you have to play with that because some families, no matter how loving, no matter how kind, are still, in a sense, intrusive on what the person is trying to live. Some people just break completely and they bolt.
Right. Well, but they never, I mean, even in your stories, they never quite break completely. That's it. The memory of who you were in their eyes is
well,
always.
Well, it's who you are.
Yeah. And that break can be very difficult. That's why I find it fascinating that you can use that everyday language and everyday imagery to get at these deep things that none of us can really, you know, we could be on the couch for years and the doc couldn't get at that, right?
I guess so. A psychiatrist could probe and probe and probe. That's true.
You've got another story too, the Christmas longings that appeared in Our State magazine last year. Tell us about that.
It may be too short to include. I gave it to my editor and said, I've written this, but I think it's too short to put in the book, but he seemed to love it. So he stuck it in, but some of the stories are much longer than that. Of course, that's the shortest one. It's about a memory.
Very autobiographical, would you say? Fair?
Well, yes, that more than any of my stories, because at home in Mississippi in a small town I was brought up, we had a Christmas pageant, and my mother actually always directed it at the Presbyterian Church, and I wanted to be an angel once. And I was promised I could be an angel, but I had grown taller, and I had to be a shepherd, which was dull and not pretty at all. And I couldn't wear tinsel in my hair and wings. And so it was easy to transfer that, since our state wanted something about North Carolina, to a little town near the mountains. So I just put the mountains in there and let the story unfold. And I invented a sister for the little girl and so on. And so that's what I made the story happen, but it is based a lot on home truth.
When we ask the fine writers in this area who are their most important authors that they look to, Elizabeth Spencer is always at the top of the list. So who are the Southern writers that you read and appreciate?
Oh, my heavens, I was brought up in a nest of the finest writing in the world. William Faulkner was nearby, and Eudora Welty was actually a friend of mine in Jackson. And so how do you write against such a tide as that? Well, you don't. You just try to be yourself and write the best you can. And so those were great admirations at the start. And other writers also. But around here, we have a myriad number of very good writers. Alan Gerganis is a good friend. He's dedicated, this book's dedicated, because we exchange manuscripts all the time. And read, and do you like this? So what can I do? That kind of thing goes on. And Lee Smith is a longtime friend. Jill McCorkle, Clyde Edgerton. There are just a whole lot of people here who write. You'll never run out of a program that has writers.
I am the luckiest man on the planet. I get to for homework, I get to read Elizabeth Spencer and then get to talk with her the next day. So what are you working on? What's next? When are you coming back?
I don't think I thought my last book, A Southern Woman, it's in Modern Library, it's still in print, was the last book. And I just accumulated a few stories, and some publishers in New York wrote me about them, and that's how it happened. I wasn't aiming to write a new book, but since it's happened and people seem to like it, I'm pleased. But even to plan a new novel now, which I've tried to do for a long time, and it doesn't come about, but it may just happen almost by accident.
That's the next unexpected, uninvited guest.
Right.
Your new novel.
The uninvited guest. That starts them off, didn't
it? There we go. And we'll have you back.
Thank you.
Thanks so much, Elizabeth Spencer, for being on the program. Chapel Hill-based author, the newest book, a collection of stories, starting over tomorrow. Her documentary, Landscape of the Heart, the Elizabeth Spencer story, is going to screen at the Durham Public Library. You can go see that film. And you can also see Elizabeth Spencer on the 16th of January at the Regulator Bookshop in Durham. And for more information, you can go to our website, stateofthings.org. Next up, live music, singer-songwriter Anna Rose Beck. Stay tuned.